This podcast is powered by Shockingly Different Leadership, the go-to firm companies trust when needing to up-level their leadership development, improve their HR operations, realign their workforce infrastructures, and increase their capacity to handle business-critical people initiatives. Check out our world-class experts at shockinglydifferent.com and see why SDL should be your number one ally to help your HR, learning, and talent functions become future-ready today.
We all very much supported those contractors and the recruitment, the onboarding, because they were such a critical part of the company, and it worked beautifully.
Blended workforces are one of the hottest talent strategies today, where employers are using a mix of traditional employees with external resources like independent contractors, coaches, consultants, vendors, and technology solutions, all in order to enhance competitiveness, ensure cost flexibility, and expedite business goals. But how are the successful companies infusing blended workforces into their business strategy? And what are the critical success factors and pitfalls to avoid during implementation? And on the flip side, what does it really take for suppliers to improve their chances of finding and landing contract opportunities? The devil is in the details, my friends. I'm your host, Karen Farrell Rhodes, and it's time to get smarter about blended workforces at work. Hello, my dear listeners and friends. Welcome to today's show. We are absolutely thrilled to feature, believe it or not, another Karen. It's going to be the Karen Show today. We're so happy to feature Karen Callis, who is the founder of Callis & Callis Consulting. That firm is a leadership development and human resources consulting firm, which Karen founded with her husband, David. Now, previous to starting the firm, Karen had an extensive career in training development, HR, and leadership coaching, as well as employee engagement. And she has had a ton of experience in the nonprofit, private, and public sector arenas. So you can imagine the types of stories that she may have for us. Now, her husband, David, who's not on the show today, we're featuring Karen today, but he is also a co-founder, and he has received a doctorate in clinical psychology and is an expert in behavioral health, workplace culture, staff development, and leadership coaching. And this dynamic duo teamed up after having individual careers to come and form this fantastic firm where they're providing a lot of high quality, innovative support for organizations, individuals, and systems. So welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me. I am overjoyed to be here.
Oh, we're just absolutely thrilled to have you as well. And can't wait to delve into some of your insights, both when you were working for an employer and then now as you've made that transition into running your own firm with your husband. So we really want to get into that. But before we get into the great stuff, we want to start with probably some even better things, because we love to get a sneak peek into your personal life and passions for as much as you feel comfortable. So can you share a tidbit or two with us?
Sure, you bet. I live in Boulder, Colorado with my husband. We both love outdoor activities, as all Boulderites do.
Yeah.
So hiking and just being in the beautiful outdoors is incredibly important. We have an adult daughter who lives out of state now, but is thinking of moving back to Boulder soon. So we are really happy about that.
I bet.
Yes. I mean, we're overjoyed and incredibly proud of her. And we live here in our house with our two cats, who you may see running through the background at some point.
That is totally fine, because I know my listeners know, and those who are on YouTube will watchers know, that I have two toy dogs underneath my desk right now, and sometimes they like to be part of the podcast as well. So it's our fur babies are more than welcome to show up when they want to, if they want to. Well, let's get started. Karen, I'd love to first start a little bit about, have you talk a little bit about your employment in I won't say just corporate America, because you've had a tad there, but you've been in a lot of different industries. But can you share a little bit of overview about your experience before you started the firm Callis & Callis with your husband?
Of course. My human resources career started many years ago at a temporary service in California, where I was working in the office placing temporary employees with our clients. And that was my introduction to HR, which fits really nicely with this conversation that we're having today. When I moved to Colorado, my career had, I had various different jobs, but the majority of my career was spent in public sector, a public school district as an HR specialist, and then also in nonprofit for a human services organization. I did have some time in human resources for a tech startup for a short time, but really the majority of it was spent for in a nonprofit. And then since I've been consulting with for-profits, nonprofits, a whole variety of industries and sectors.
Very fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And I always love to, I tease, but it's kind of serious. I've never yet in my over 20-year career have met an overstaffed HR function. I don't think we've met. If you've seen one, I would love to meet them.
It never happened. Never happened.
And as much as, and most of my career has been in corporate America before founding SDL, but as understaffed as we were at corporate, and I was at like enterprise level companies, nonprofits are even more understaffed, because I found in working with them, because they're having to do a lot with the little. So I'm wondering if you have seen that in your experience as well, and how that nonprofits compare to maybe like public sector type of organizations.
I agree with what you said, Karen, with the nonprofits tend to have less funding, and therefore their human resources functions can be stretched even thinner. And the nonprofit industry that I worked in received its funding from primarily the state of Colorado, but some federal funding as well.
Sure.
But those funding streams were, they were limited. We never had the opportunity to charge, to increase our fees for services. Those fees were set by the state. So when the economy changed, or the cost of hiring changed, we didn't have the opportunity to increase the price of our product to pass that along to our employees or our contractors. So in those cases, where do you cut costs? You cut costs in some of the areas like human resources or other things.
Yeah, unfortunately. But then on the other hand, people strategies are the heartbeat of what make organizations work. So it's almost like an oxymoron, if you will. You know,
it's like catch 22. Definitely.
That's what I meant. Catch 22. Yes. That's a perfect term.
Yes.
So I'm curious, if you think back into the times when maybe you were able to, I don't know in what employer or organization, but think to a time when you all found a little bit of budget and were able to hire some external assistants, contractors, or maybe a technology solution or what have you. Why do you think the business leaders supported that? And were there any roadblocks to like onboarding external talent in to get them ramped up really quick?
So I do want to talk about the nonprofit where I worked with in human services. And it's a fairly large nonprofit, probably around 500 employees.
Oh, yeah.
But also hundreds of independent contractors.
Really?
And hundreds. Yes. And they were performing very specific, very critical roles for that company. And it worked. It worked wonderfully. And so the leadership of that company, we all very much supported those contractors and the recruitment, the onboarding, because they were such a critical part of the company. And it worked beautifully. Now, I do think that having a mission-driven organization where the mission is clearly articulated and the vision is clearly articulated helps in bringing on those contingent employees or those independent contractors in a way that helps them blend with the overall culture. Because everybody, the employees and the external workers, all have the same mission.
They know what they're signing up for, kind of.
They know what they're signing up for. And in this case, the financially prudent method to use to provide the services that we needed to provide.
That makes a lot of sense. And I don't know if you remember, but how did you source your contractors at the time? Because that's a lot of contractors to kind of have an eye out for. Did you have another organization that kind of screened them and brought them in? Or did you all have to select them? Do you remember?
I do remember. And that is such a great question. And with that many contractors, of course, you're right. Just sourcing them and finding them and onboarding them, all of that is a major responsibility.
Yeah.
We had a department that managed those contractors because we had enough and they were all doing the same function. This large group of contractors was all performing the same function. So we did have a department that managed that screened the potential contractors and onboarded them in, you know, to the things, the areas that they needed to be onboarded, and then managed them on an ongoing basis as well in terms of making sure they were fulfilling the requirements of their contract in the way that the contract was written.
Very fascinating. If you had one piece of advice to give someone who's an independent contractor that is considering a role similar to, you know, the ones that you mentioned where they're going to be part of a big team that is doing a specific project, is there one piece of advice or recommendation that you want to make sure that they walk away with? Because I know a lot of, especially brand new freelancers or independent contractors, they were fantastic when they were working within a organizational structure, but switching their hats to being a contractor is kind of a little bit of a different world. So I'm curious if you have any kind of piece of advice or things that you noted that might be great for others to know.
Yes, you're right, Karen. Switching from being an employee over to a contractor, it's a really big difference. I would say make sure you understand what support you will have and won't have as a contractor. How is the company that you're contracting with going to be involved? And is that okay with you? And some contractors don't want any involvement. They really want to be independent. And other contractors may not be comfortable with that if they've always been employed previously.
Great point. And then I'm also curious as to, and it's okay if the answer is no, because not all companies or many companies don't do this at all. But did you ever give any instruction to maybe the leaders of the departments that the companies, the contractors are working in on what kind of interactions they can and cannot have with the contractors so as not to cross any, say, IRS guidelines or anything like that?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And as you know, that can be so tricky, especially if you have long-term contractors and you do need to manage performance or outcomes in some way, shape, or form, but you can't manage performance in the same way you do for an employee. So yes, there were plenty of those conversations.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, let's hop to the other side of the table, because at some point you and David founded Callis and Callis. So you kind of went from the employer side of the house to the external workforce side of the house. Tell me how that transition was for you in making that decision.
For me, and I think for David, both, it's really been great. I love the ability to support a business or support leadership from a business and not go down that rabbit hole with them of everything that might be involved in the business. You can provide your information, you can make recommendations, you can complete the task, project, whatever it is that you are tasked with as a consultant, but you're not married to that company in the same way you may feel that you are if you're employed.
Yeah, absolutely. And was it a hard transition for you and David to, because it's hard, leading your own firm is a full-time job within itself, right?
Right. There have been challenges, yes. For me, I'm not going to speak for David, but for me, I have missed having a team of people that I work with day in and day out and that I'm part of. And, you know, I have found that in other ways, but that is the teams that I have worked with in the past have been pure magic at times. And I miss having that.
I love that you said that, Karen, because that was one of the reasons why we adapted our business model 2 years in. Because I'm an off the charts extrovert. I get my energy interacting with people. And yes, you interact very heavily with the clients, but once you roll off a project, other than staying in touch and saying hello every now and then, you kind of lose that intimate professional relationship when you're, you know, rolling your sleeves up day in and day out helping them, right? And so a couple of years into us, because I started out as a solopreneur, but a couple of years into our business model, I had worked with my coach and we kind of changed it to having a more stable internal team, because that's where me as a founder got my energy from. And it seemed like others that I partnered with, those that I knew and could vouch for, they were feeling the same way. And so I was like, well, let's just build a team for us to be able to have that kind of connection. So I totally relate to that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a big thing for me. Yeah.
Well, how do you and David split up the duties? Because you all have different areas of expertise that synergize very well, I must say, from on paper anyway. But how do you all kind of divvy up duties? Is it based on what comes across your desk, or are you very intentional about who's going to take what? Would love your thinking around that.
We're really doing two separate things that happen to overlap. So my focus is human resources, leadership development, management development, workforce strategy. You know, I might get into compensation, things like that. David is, with his clinical psychology background, he is organizational psychology. He may administer different assessments with either an entire organization or individuals in an organization, and then follow up with coaching around those assessments. So he really draws on his background as a clinical psychologist for the work that he does. And I'm really drawing on my background in management and leadership and human resources for the things that I do. Now, sometimes they cross over, as you can see, but
sometimes they don't, maybe, right?
And sometimes they don't, right? So it may be that I have a client that he's not at all involved in, or he has a client that I'm not at all involved in.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, where do you find your clients? How do you do business development?
David's better at that than I am. largely referral based.
Yeah, that's very common. It's very common. Do you all do any other type of outreach? Because I know there's a lot of consultants out there that are just curious on best practices on how to get your first client. I know referral is always the best. Use your network. It's already warm. They're more inclined to keep you in mind. But are there any other things that you all leverage to try to get your name out into the market?
Absolutely. I've joined a consultant collaborative. So it's HR consultants in the Colorado, more or less the Front Range area. And that's been great for me. Primarily, we meet online and we will pass clients to each other if we're overwhelmed ourselves and don't have the bandwidth to take on another client, or if the client is asking for something that we don't feel is within our area of expertise. So that's been fantastic, both in terms of gaining referrals, but also to help me with that missing of a team that we talked about before. And I'm okay with not having regular clients and working 40 hours every week in my consulting business. I know a lot of people aren't. And that's another challenge of being a consultant, is you really don't know if you're going to have steady work a week from now, a month from now, or 6 months from now.
That's right.
So another thing absolutely to keep in mind as you wade into the consulting waters.
You're so right on that. And people seem to underestimate sometimes how long it takes to effectively like replace your salary or to have semi-consistent income. And you have to really take your personal budgeting and business budgeting seriously so that during the leaner months or weeks that you're able to still pay the light bill, while you're trying to, get additional business. You're so right on that. If you had one piece of advice or a suggestion for leaders who are considering a blended workforce strategy as a significant piece of their organization, say they're going to transition to kind of rethinking where they find talent and who it is and how they work. What is one, I know there's a ton of advice you probably could give based on your background, but what is one piece of advice you would want any business leader to keep in mind?
To make sure that your workforce strategy, whatever that may be, is in alignment with your business strategy.
Love that. Say more about that.
Well, your business strategy has to direct your workforce strategy. Your business strategy has to come first. So have that laid out, have that plan in place, and then consider what your workforce strategy might look like so that you can achieve your business strategy. And consider everything. You don't have to use everything, but consider everything. Part-time employees, temporary employees, external employees. How does AI fit into your workforce strategy? Depending on what your business is, maybe robots fit into your workforce strategy. All of those things can be part of your workforce, but your workforce planning should be driven by your business strategy.
I could just drop the mic there. That is priceless, Karen. Absolutely priceless. And I'm going to, do the yes and. Yes and. I will say once you have a straw man or a framework of the business strategy you're thinking about, bring in your HR advisor or HR leader or consultant very soon into that so that you can socialize it with them. You're thinking so they can maybe give you some initial feedback that might help you tweak your business strategy if needed. And let them be partners with you as you close the business strategy on out versus locking and loading it and then bringing them in and say, okay, you implement it. And there might be blind spots that you miss, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
That's what I've seen. Well, so thank you so much for those pieces of insight. One question we always love to ask our guests is, I wrote a book on leadership execution best practices. And we talk about 7 tactics that very successful leaders always make sure they incorporate in any leadership effort of any kind. And you were so kind to share that leading with intellectual horsepower really resonated with you. And so for my listeners out there, Leading intellectual horsepower is all about using your areas of expertise to what we call peek around corners and spot trends that and connect the dots that others may have missed or did not realize. It's all about bringing, using your expertise to bring new and innovative opportunities to the table. And so we're just curious, Karen, curious minds want to know why intellectual horsepower really piqued your interest and stood out for you.
I think intellectual horsepower is an area that I identify with and find to be fun, if that can make sense in this. And when I'm part of a leadership team or in a consulting role, I think I'm skilled at and enjoy asking the questions to bring about, I love how the peeking around the corner, right? To asking the questions to find out, well, what about? Well, what if? Well, let's look at it differently, and exploring all of the different angles, poking holes in things to make sure that the ideas or the direction that we're pursuing really does make sense in all the ways, or in all the ways that we can foresee.
Yes, we are definitely sisters from other mothers, because that I absolutely love that as well. And it's amazing when you have very rich conversations around that. People sometimes get nervous when you poke holes in their thoughts or ideas, but I find it creates even more innovation.
Yes.
As people's minds open up to your point, what if, what would happen? What if we took a chance here? Or, you know, I didn't think about that perspective. Let me build on that. Oh gosh, I could do that all day, every day. Couldn't
yes.
you?
Yes. I love it.
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, before we close out, Karen, I would love for you to let our listeners know where they can find you. We'll definitely have all your information in the show notes and on our website, but I'd like for you to give voice to that. So if people want to reach out and check out your services, they can do so.
Great. The best place to do that is our website. Of course, it's callusconsulting.com. You can contact us easily through that website.
And will you please spell Callus for them?
Thank you, Karen. Yes, it is KALIS consulting.com.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Well, that's all the time, unfortunately, that we have for today. But I want to thank you so much, Karen, for your gift of time and sharing your insights on blended workforces with our audience. It has been a fantastic conversation, and we really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Oh, fantastic. And also, I want to thank you, listeners, for the gift of your time for joining another episode of the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and rate us and share the podcast with just one friend, because by doing so, that will help us spread the word about the magnificent talent strategy of Blended Workforces at Work. Thanks so much, and see you next week. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again for listening to the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. You can check out the show notes, additional episodes, bonus resources, and also submit guest recommendations on our website at blendedworkforcesatwork.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, or YouTube by searching for the name Karen Rhodes, with Karen being spelled K-A-R-A-N. And if you like the show, the greatest gift you can give would be to subscribe and leave a rating on your favorite podcast platform of choice. This podcast has been a production of Shockingly Different Leadership, a global consultancy which helps organizations execute their people, talent development, and organizational effectiveness initiatives on an on-demand, contract, fractional, or project basis. Huge thanks to the SDL production and editing team for a job well done. Bye for now.